Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, I am so excited today because we actually have a real good martini for number one, which has not been always the case lately. And then truly bizarre for number three. This might be one of the greatest third martinis in history. And, unfortunately, this is someone who's actually elected to public office. So we start with martini number one, and that's what the House Republicans were able to accomplish this week. And to some extent, the Senate Democrats, they moved very quickly on these three free trade deals with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea, possibly so they could have something to sign with the president of South Korea when he came to town yesterday. But whatever the reason, they got it done. This is the one economic idea the president has put forth to Congress that actually makes sense in the last 3 years. We also have the House Republicans passing the Protect Life Act. So to make up for the ridiculous Stupak executive order that got foisted on the health care bill that really didn't stop taxpayer dollars from being used to pay for abortions. And if that weren't enough, the president called John Boehner to congratulate him for passing the trade agreements, and Boehner decided to give him an earful for continuing to suggest that Republicans don't have any jobs ideas when, in fact, they've been churning them up by the dozens over the past several months, and the Senate refuses to do anything about it. So if you're looking for a Congress that's doing something and doing something right, at least one chamber's got its eye on the ball, I think, Jim.
I think you're right, Greg, and I'm thinking about this, the trade bills in particular. I thought partisanship was running rampant all over Washington, and the parties would never come together, and, oh, we were all in sackcloth and ashes, and isn't life terrible, blah, 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 blah. Not only did these, you know, this get through the Congress, it was largely Republicans who passed these by pretty wide majorities, and most of the opposition to these trade deals came from Democrats. So for Obama to be, oh, obstructionism, obstructionism. Look, in this case, the obstructionism and most of the opposition came from your own party, Mr. President. You know, this, you know, throws a big monkey wrench into this narrative of these obstinate Republicans who will never, you know, sign on to any of Obama's ideas. And, oh, by the way, the whole thing was, oh, Republicans wanted the economy to tank, right? They're deliberately trying to not help the economy because they think hurting the economy is going to help their chances against Obama in 2012, et cetera. Well, if that's the case, why don't they just vote for the trade deal? Because they secretly know the trade deal will hurt the American people. You know, I mean, like, this entire philosophy put forth by Obama and his allies just took a big shot from this. The other thing you just mentioned on that pro-life proposal there, just observing that, like, this got Nancy Pelosi and the vast majority of the Democrats to argue that freedom of conscience is something that America shouldn't stand for.
Right.
The best way to provide the very best health care for as many Americans as possible is to not allow medical professionals to have a conscience and to, you know, to force them to do things that they find morally abhorrent, et cetera. I was listening to the radio about this earlier today, and, you know, Republicans want women to die, et cetera. Really? So in order to make sure women don't die, we have to make medical professionals do a procedure that they see is murder.
Right.
Or that they believe is murder, or they believe is the moral equivalent of murder. And I really think that as much as abortion remains this very, very divisive issue, those of us on the pro-life side win when we can force the opposition to insist that there is no moral gray area, that there is no confusion, and that every last bit of this. And so the idea is that we have to force doctors to do these kinds of procedures. That's the best way to help the country. I think that's a lunatic extreme position, and I think it's fantastic that Pelosi and so many Democrats have been forced into that.
On to martini number two now, and as we mentioned, the president of South Korea at the White House on Thursday, a joint press conference, very formal. Shockingly, Ed Henry of Fox News is one of the only people to get a chance to ask a question, and so he asked the president about the foiled Iranian terror plot against the Saudi ambassador, wants to know whether the president and his administration sees this as an act of war, and he quotes Mitt Romney as being critical of the president's foreign policy. Well, here's the president's response to all this.
What specific steps will you take to hold Iran accountable? Especially when Mitt Romney charged last week, quote, if you do not want America to be the strongest nation on earth, I am not your president. You have that president today.
I didn't know that you were the spokesperson for Mitt Romney.
You know, I,
Hilarity, Mr. President.
Yeah, that basically just gave him about 10 seconds to try and figure out what in the world he's actually going to say about it. But still, just a sharp jab from a president who doesn't apparently like hard questions from anyone. And Jim, I don't know Ed Henry well. I don't think I've probably spoken with him since his days at Roll Call, but then he went to CNN and now he's been at Fox for a little while. Ed Henry is not some sort of rabid partisan in any way, shape, or form. He's a good journalist, and the idea that he's somehow carrying water just because he happens to work now for Fox News is ludicrous, but it's a part of a narrative that the president continues to try and paint, and it just makes him look really petty, especially at a formal event like that.
I've mentioned this in the Morning Jolt. You can learn a lot about a man by what angers him. People who listen to this podcast know, Greg, if you and I start talking about Fast and Furious, at some point we will start pounding our desk and saying, how the heck did this happen? Why is there no answers on this? Why is there no accountability? Why did anybody see that letting guns go across the border into the hands of drug... we get exercised about it. When Obama talks about it, he's always like, well, I didn't know anything about it, and I'm terribly disturbed by it. You know, there's no real emotion in Obama's voice.
Right.
What about Solyndra? You and I are like, oh, my goodness, there were so many red flags. So many people were saying this company couldn't make money, and now we're on the hook for $550 million. And, geez, why isn't, why isn't Obama – and Obama says, look, you know, these things happen, you know. You got to make gambles. Sometimes you win. Sometimes you lose. You know, what are you going to do? And then Ed Henry mentions Mitt Romney in a question, and then he gets bitchy. Then he gets snippy, you know. Then you could tell, that really stuck in Obama's craw, and, you know, he decided to really stick it to Ed Henry. You know, this is what angers Obama, much more than government waste, much more than government incompetence. It's the tone of the questions from that perfidious provocateur, Ed Henry. And Ed Henry's like one of the nicest guys in the Washington press corps. Like, the idea that, you know, there was anything outlandish about that question is baffling, and I think it says something about Obama's ego and his expectation of how he should be treated, that he feels the need to really jab at Henry for having the audacity to ask that question. I thought Obama liked audacity.
Well, it just goes to prove what we've been saying all along. The most important thing to Obama is Obama. And apparently, Obama's not going far enough, Jim, with this jobs bill. Illinois Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. was interviewed by the Daily Caller and was asked to respond to the fact that because the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats, rejected his jobs bill, the president now wants to see how much of this can actually be implemented without congressional approval. And so this was asked to Jesse Jackson, who decided to unload in an unbelievable way.
Quite frankly, the Congress is in rebellion, determined, as Abraham Lincoln said, to wreck or ruin at all costs. I believe, quite frankly, in the direct hiring of 15 million unemployed Americans. At $40,000 a head, some more than $40,000, some less than $40,000, that's a $600 billion stimulus. It could be a five-year program. For another $104 billion, we bail out all of the states. The problem within the states ends tomorrow for $104 billion. For another $100 billion, we bail out all of the cities. So for about $804 billion, we put 15 million Americans to work, we bail out the states, and we bail out the cities, but we do it through direct hire. We put people to work cleaning up communities, we put people to work through a civilian conservation corps, through a Works Progress Administration, because the hour demands it.
So you got this math that he's torturing here, because he claims that, okay, you hire 15 million people at $40,000 a pop, $600 billion, then decides it's going to be a five-year plan. So that's $3 trillion. Later, he says some economists have decided the president's current jobs bill is only 1/20 of the size it should be. So that's $10 trillion more. Now we're up to $13 trillion. And here's perhaps the scariest part.
Clearly, Republicans are not going to be for it. But if the administration can handle administratively what can be done, we should pursue it. And if there are extra constitutional opportunities that allow the president administratively to put the American people to work, he should pursue every single one of them.
Jim, it's now this just awful combination of the Constitution and Republicans evilly working together to stop this $13 trillion plan from becoming a reality and hiring every person on the government dole.
You know, Greg, I plan on robbing a bank later this afternoon, and I'm not thinking of it as breaking the law. I'm just thinking of it as an extra constitutional opportunity, because sometimes you just have to work around the law. You just decide that it's inconvenient to what you want, and thus you ignore it, which basically is what Jesse Jackson is promoting for here. And one, you point out the math problem on that, because there's the idea that first he says, okay, it's going to be, you know, we're going to hire 15 million people at $40,000 a year all in 1 year. To do what?
clean up parks, apparently.
Under a true Keynesian program, $7.5 million will be digging holes. The other $7.5 million will be filling them back up. And we'll just be a holy country. He says it's a five-year plan. Do we hire $3 million per year? And then in order to keep the cost at the original number, he said, you get hired for a year at $40,000 a year, and then you're fired. And then the next $3 million get hired. And then they get fired. So all these 15 million people, we're not really helping them that much. We're just letting them know that at least 1 year out of the next five, you'll be hired by the government at $40,000 a year to dig holes or fill them. There's a 50-50 chance. When I heard this, and you talk about extra constitutional measures, I haven't seen the George Clooney movie Ides of March, and I don't expect to, but in one of the reviews, he plays this presidential candidate who's apparently, you know, the Clooney version of Obama, hope and change. And at one point, he says something like, my religion is a piece of paper called the United States Constitution. I guess it's a kind way of saying he's an atheist. So the idea being that, you know, look, he's this perfect candidate. Everything comes from the Constitution, which actually sounds kind of like the Tea Party stuff. And I don't think, you know, George Clooney would be able to get his head around it. But whenever I hear anybody on the left say how much they're dedicated to the Constitution, I say, no, you're not. The moment it gets in the way of what you want to toss it aside. And there's no better example of that than the individual mandate and then the legal fights that are coming out around this. The idea that there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the government anything remotely like the power to tell citizens they have to buy something or else be fined or expelled, I guess. So the conservatives raise the objection of it's unconstitutional. And the no, it's not. So I guess you could say if you don't believe the Constitution means anything, then yeah, I guess you love the Constitution because it never stands in your way. Whereas for conservatives, the Constitution is the Constitution even for ideas that we like. You know, if you and I wanted to have some sort of really terrific idea, let's make every American open up a 401k. That actually would be a really good thing to get people to save for their futures and to, you know, have a stake in the market and to have a sense, start understanding about dividends and all these financial models and just, you know, issues that they're generally largely ignorant of. But we can't. It's not there in the Constitution. Nothing in the Constitution gives the government the authority to force everyone to form a 401k, et cetera, et cetera. I think this statement from Jesse Jackson Jr., in the end, they're all like Phil Hare. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't really like to think about it. It's just this thing under glass at the National Archives that they deem completely irrelevant to their entire philosophy of what government should do.
I think it basically comes down, Jim, to the fact that on the one hand, you have those who believe the Constitution is the law of the land. And on the other hand, he won. So, you know,
yeah.
it's a major clash of ideas.
Yeah, or the hour requires it, he says. And I'd like to know, what is this talking clock that is giving messages to Jesse Jackson that is demanding it? Like, I kind of picture it. Maybe it's like a voice in his head. He's just going to, you must hire 15 million people. And, you know, he just, he hears this and he thinks, ah, the hour is demanding it. I don't know what the minute hand is saying.
Well, for a guy who was probably going outside the Constitution and trying to get in the U.S. Senate, although we don't have direct proof of that, should not be surprised. Should not be surprised whatsoever. Jim, have a fabulous weekend, and I'll find out what your clock told you on Monday.
Everybody have an extra constitutional weekend.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.